tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 9th of July 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means it is Geopolitical Analysis Day and we have a very special geopolitical analyst with us. He is also a professor of Orthodox history and that is Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rushjournal.org, my colleague here at Radio Albion. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I am very proud to be a colleague of yours. I had something witty to say, and I forgot it, as we were talking so much prior to the recording. But we have here in the in Western Pennsylvania finally somewhat of a civilized temperature. I was dying. My lineage does not accept 90-degree humid weather. It just doesn't.
Well, you're lucky because it's certainly too hot here. And it's certainly hot out there in Ukraine and Russia, where they're still fighting together. And our title today for today's episode is European Psychopathy, the Never-Ending War in Ukraine. And we're taking our notes from globalresearch.ca. Exchanging massive long-range strikes has now become the new normal for Russia and NATO-occupied Ukraine. As a global military superpower, Moscow's advantage in high-tech heavy-hitting missiles is obvious, as is its use of advanced long-range drones. It is precisely in unmanned systems, including drones, that the Kiev regime can maintain a certain level of parity, thanks to the enormous resources and money invested by the entire Western, and particularly American, military-industrial complex, or MIC. Besides drones, the political West has not been able to match the Kremlin in any other weapon system. Not for the lack of trying, though, which severely limits and undermines the Kiev state. Kiev forces keep trying to develop and deploy all sorts of missiles, but the results have been quite modest when pitted against a country like Russia. This is precisely why the Kiev regime keeps focusing on asymmetric warfare through the mass use of unmanned systems. Thanks to the so-called underdog effect, the Kiev state's attacks are often highly inflated in terms of their impact on Russia, while Moscow's retaliatory precision strikes are usually downplayed, overlooked, or downright ignored. However, their effects simply cannot be disregarded. This is especially true for the latest combined arms mass strike on NATO-occupied Ukraine, namely on the night of July 2nd, at least 74 missiles and 476 strike drones were launched on targets across the country. Numerous facilities of military-industrial significance, logistics, fuel and energy infrastructure were destroyed or sustained heavy damage. Air raid sirens lasted over 11 hours, while a record 52,000 people took shelter in Kiev's massive Russian-built metro system. The quote-unquote neo-Nazi junta officials who almost exclusively globalresearch.ca, we'll comment on that in a minute. The neo-Nazi junta officials who almost exclusively praise their air and missile defenses and inflate interception rates were now forced to admit they had completely failed. Unsurprisingly, they blamed Moscow's new tactics of using initial waves of drones and cheap ballistic decoys, exhausting interceptor stocks, followed by Zircon scramjet-powered hypersonic cruise missiles, and ending with jet-powered Garand 345 drones, which can only be countered by interceptor missiles. Now, it seems to me we know that Russia is really a first world military power. And it could easily just destroy Ukraine just like that. And from what I've seen of this so far, what Ukraine attacks Russia with, Russia then attacks them back with, and is very measured about it and doesn't accelerate things until Ukraine accelerates them. And I mean, how can we have gone on this long knowing the military power that Russia has, knowing that they're literally fighting with their hands tied behind their backs willingly, and yet the general public still seem to support Ukraine in this when it's a completely unwinnable war? And the only reason it's gone on so long is because Russia has refused to just use their intercontinental missiles, basically, and flatten Kiev. I mean, they could quite easily do it, but they don't do it. They're being extremely measured. And it seems like their patience is running out here now that they're using, basically causing the inhabitants of Kiev to run underground to actually get away from this. And we'll see the reason why there's been this increase in a minute. But how can this have gone on for so long, Matt, when it's so obvious that Russia could just destroy Ukraine any second if it felt like it wanted to do that? The fact that it's not doing that shows you that they don't actually bear the Ukrainian people any ill will. Because surely if they did and they just wanted to take the place over, they'd just flatten it. Only they're not doing it. I mean, what do you make of this, Matt?
That's precisely right. I don't know if you know this, but I have a book out on the on this war. And I talk about it there, and I'm still fielding questions about that. You know, why don't they just flat? You know, let me give you a few reasons. Yeah, number one, as you've already said, they don't want to kill Orthodox people. That's the big one. Number two, most of the assets are either Russian or Soviet built that that Ukraine has. You know, this is really and third, this is a hearts and minds thing. They want to show the world that we're not going to, you know, and people don't understand this. You know, why don't they just they have the power to, but you know, destroying Kiev, for example, would mean destroying some of the most ancient churches in Russian history. And Putin has a problem with that. And Ukrainians would have a problem with that. And there's no doubt, you know, I mean, the Ukrainian media is claiming that they're hitting hospitals and stuff like that, just as projection. But what the Ukrainians are doing here beyond that is, you know, sometimes or mostly, in fact, hitting civilian targets. The Russians are hitting only military targets. And the reason this has gone on for so long, this war was really over in April. Of 22. But when you have a country artificially buttressed by the Western powers, who have a bizarre obsession with, if not destroying, at least harming Putin's Russia or Russia in general, that's the cause of it. You know, none of this stuff was ever even conceived during the Soviet era. No, they never would never treat the USSR like this. They treated the USSR with respect. They were investing in it and everything else. Only when Putin took over, all of a sudden, it's a Russia has to be destroyed. And Russia is very careful. I mean, Russia has hit, you know, like power stations and things like that. And Putin said very clearly, I don't want to do this. But when you make terrorism, you know, state policy, we have to reply. And he is getting some criticism, especially from soldiers in the field, that you should just, you know, start the slaughter. But I think a lot of people can understand why Putin does have a problem with this. The desertion, for example, from the Ukrainian military is all going to Russia. Or I shouldn't say all. A large portion of it is going to Russia. Russia is taking the high ground here, but it is absolutely bizarre that the West simply won't let this go. We know that the losses are now over 2 million killed in action. That would include, you know, mercenaries and everybody else. I don't know. I think they won't release official statistics, of course. But yeah, they're basically saying 28,000 or something ridiculous like that. And the infantry, you know, at the front is in such bad shape. I truly feel bad for them. If you get injured, you know, there's no medical assistance. There's nothing. They have nothing. And this is not the war that Russia wanted to fight. But whether it be in the Middle East or in Ukraine, it seems that the U.S., when they lose, will engage in just flat-out terrorism, hitting hospitals, hitting you know, whatever civilian center they want. Russia has responded a little, you know, power stations and things like that, but they would rather not. For the most part, this latest set of strikes is there, has hit mostly the military industrial complex. You would think this stuff would have been destroyed already, but you know, these are, well, we'll get to that in a minute, but Putin has been very measured for a reason. I think that's the reason.
I don't understand why Ukraine have got this such a thing about this land. I mean, it's full of Russians. The contested land, which announced that they wanted to join Russia about 10 years ago, they had a referendum, and something like 80%, 90% of them said they wanted to join Russia. And then Putin waited 8 years before going in there to protect them. Why is it so important to Ukraine that they keep hold of this little bit of land, which is just full of Russians anyway, and always been full of Russians? It's always been full of Russian speakers. This is what I don't get. Do they really think it's worth millions of white European lives, effectively, to hold on to this bit of land? I mean, what are they going to do with all the Russians that live there that voted to join Russia? Clearly, they're going to abuse them. You cannot have a situation where the Donbass republics go back to Ukraine. I mean, what about the people that live there that don't want to be a part of Ukraine? The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. Getting back to our notes here. South Front published a comprehensive list of priority targets, the vast majority of which belong to the Kiev regime's ever-increasing NATO-backed MIC. The whole list includes a lot more, but we could highlight the most important targets relevant to this analysis. Number one, Radionics LLC, a radio electronics enterprise manufacturing control systems for Flamingo and Neptune MD cruise missiles, Firepoint 7/9 operational tactical ballistic missiles, and Klon series of SAMs, surface-to-air missiles. Number two, Atlon Avia Research and Production Corporation, an assembly facility supplying the Kiev regime forces with AN-196 Lyuti long-range UAVs, Magyar naval drones, and numerous other unmanned systems. Number three, Antonov State Enterprise, the primary production base of the Kiev regime's aviation industry, engaged in the development and manufacture of manned military aircraft, as well as the assembly and modernization of AN-196 Lyuti UAVs. Number four, Kiev Radio Plant and Trimen Ukraine LLC Enterprises, involved in the modernization of fire control systems for tanks and infantry fighting vehicles, including optical sights and guidance devices for armored vehicles, as well as components for reconnaissance and strike UAVs, the integrated circuits and microassembly elements for air defense systems, electronic warfare equipment, and aviation hardware produced by these enterprises directly impact the combat effectiveness of the respective systems used by the Ukraine forces. Number five, Kiev 25 PV Group Ukraine LLC, an industrial facility manufacturing and storing hardware and software components of the Lima EW system designed to spoof navigation signals in the guidance systems of precision-guided munitions. Number six, Kiev Pribor, an electrical engineering enterprise producing electric motors, generators, transformer units, instrumentation, and industrial automation equipment. Number seven, Radio Izmeritel, a state-owned aviation instrumentation enterprise associated with the production of navigation and landing equipment for aircraft and helicopters, radio technical modules, and airfield support systems. Number eight, MLP Chayka Transport and Logistics Center, a facility in the western part of Kiev used for storing long-range UAVs, warheads, and components received from abroad. So you can see there that all the targets were military targets, effectively, or they were helping the military cause. They're not attacking buses full of school children like Ukraine does in Russia. In fact, all of these attacks against Russia, this is why they get accused of terrorism, because they attack civilians. As you can see here, that what Russia is doing is attacking the hardware, basically, the support for the Ukraine military. And I dare say some of these places where they're building this equipment, it's probably on industrial estates, which is the reason why. I should imagine that you have air raid sirens going off in Kiev is because they're building some of this stuff in Kiev. I mean, it's not like they're going to be building all of this in a military area away from the civilians. It's going to be in industrial estates all over the country. So these are the targets. I mean, would I be correct in my estimate there, Matt, that these would be on industrial estates somewhere rather than military land?
Yeah, you're correct. Most of these go back to the Soviet era. Altan Avia research, that was founded in, I think it was 2013. But the technology, you know, is Russian. These, generally speaking, are either Russian or Soviet investments. Anything else would come from the West. And, you know, they haven't had to worry too much about production when they're getting huge amounts of material from the West. This is a frustration that some people have, that, you know, these should have been destroyed before. Now, they you know, in the past, the MIC in Ukraine has been destroyed. So these have been rebuilt elsewhere by the West. They can't really use any of this stuff. They simply don't have the manpower. They don't have the training or anything else to use this stuff. But overwhelmingly, these are either Soviet or Russian design. So, again, something that, and there's Russian speakers who at one point worked there. So this has nothing to do with Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't have a functional economy. Anything else would, of course, come from the West, and they're, you know, exclusively, almost exclusively dependent on Western inputs. But these are some of them, you know, are old. Radio Izmaritel is old Soviet company. Same thing goes for their energy. You know, their energy grid was built by Russia. The nuclear plants were built by the USSR. You know, for the media calling these Ukrainian is humorous. Putin has no interest in destroying the economy. He also has no interest in taking over all of Ukraine. He wants to take the part where the Russian speakers live. That was very important. And to demilitarize the rest. The industrial part where the natural resources are in the east, really the core of the old Ukrainian economy is 100% Russian in the east. And as you mentioned before, they voted in a huge margin to leave. Who wouldn't? Even Ukrainian nationalists are going to vote to leave Ukraine. There's no functional economy there. The only way that people survive is by the black and gray markets, the underground economy. That's all. The only way they can do it are foreign aid. In Putin's mind, you know, these institutions really are unusable. Everything that they're capturing really comes from the West, not from these places. And remember, Kiev doesn't have the wherewithal to actually build this stuff and use it. They simply don't. They did it one time, But the number of deaths and the brain drain over the last 10 years and everything else in Ukraine, there is no functional economy there that could support institutions like this. They've destroyed the buildings. Maybe some of them have been rebuilt. But it's important to note that these are old Soviet institutions, and some that are Russian, that there are Russian speakers who work there, especially at the high levels. And they are not an attractive target as far as Vladimir Putin is concerned. Keep in mind, you talked about Eastern Ukraine. The Ukrainian army, built up by the West, was planning a massive invasion of the Donbas. Supposed to go down something like in early March of 22. This was a purely, it was offensive, of course, but it was a way. And had they actually invaded, what they would have done to these people, I don't even want to talk about it. Clearly, they're killing them right now. I'm not sure, we want them back in Ukraine, and the way we're going to do that is terrorize them. That's been the policy here. What kind of mentality is that? Destroying dams and power stations that feed Crimea, for example. I go into great detail of that in my book. It is irrational. It is bizarre. But this is what happens when you have a tiny Jewish ruling class in Kiev, totally dependent on the U.S. You have the so-called president and maybe 20, 25 members of the Rada, mostly Jewish. There's only four legal parties in Ukraine right now. They all say the same thing. They're almost identical. Every other party has been banned. Their resources have been stolen, which is considered democratic as far as the West is concerned. And keep in mind also that these institutions they're not purely military. These were Russian investments, kept alive by, and now kept alive by Western inputs. But the simple fact is, the Ukrainian army doesn't have the manpower to use any of these very well whatsoever. Therefore, they attack buses full of school kids, as we've spoken of already.
Well, it seems to me that you've got all these legitimate targets in Ukraine that are producing the components for the weapons that are being used to kill Russians. And also throughout Europe, you've got NATO countries that are providing these weapons and America that's providing these weapons to Ukraine to use against Russia. And surely that makes these European countries that are doing this legitimate targets for
Russia.
That's
right.
And then, of course, you hear the politicians in the West talking about, oh, Putin is this massive threat. He's going to invade Europe. Well, why would he do that? Why would he attack Europe? Well, he's got a legitimate reason to, hasn't he, really? Because Europe is providing all the components for the weapons that have been used to kill Russians. So the Western leaders have literally made targets out of their own countries. I just hope that this doesn't happen. I mean, recently this week we had Nigel Farage, who's resigned over here in Britain. And as part of his resignation speech, he was talking about this big threat that Putin poses. And people have been critical of that. But I mean, he has to say that, really, because he's been accused of being Putin's friend. And anybody that's Putin's friend is going to get smeared by the press. So he has to come out with this nonsense about how Putin is this massive threat. And really, he's just going along with what all the rest of the Western leaders are saying. And the only reason why Putin would be a threat is because the West is directly threatening Russia by providing all the weaponry for Ukraine to attack them. This war would have been over 2 years ago if it wasn't for the West arming Ukraine. Getting back to the notes, as previously mentioned, this is only a fraction of the top priority targets hit by the Russian military. In addition to the capital city of NATO-occupied Ukraine, there were long-range precision strikes against military facilities in Dnipropetrovsk, Poltava, Cherkasy, and Chernigov oblasts, as well as against a logistics center in Nikolaev Oblast, used for storing and distributing drones. However, this didn't prevent the Kiev regime from launching its own attacks, with hundreds of drones targeting 19 Russian regions and federal entities on the night of July 1st and 2nd. The Russian military intercepted at least 327 drones, although some managed to punch through and hit civilians, including another Belarusian bus. This would seem a new favourite target for the Kiev forces. Russian military sources have already warned that the main issue for Moscow is that damaging or even entirely neutralising the Kiev regime's drone production and other MIC targets is not enough, because the United States, United Kingdom, EU, NATO and other vassals and satellite states keep sending massive quantities of equipment that enables the Kiev state to maintain or even expand the current level and frequency of drone strikes. The regime is even taunting Russia by setting up drone production facilities right next to its border in countries like Latvia. The obvious goal is to force the Kremlin's hand, which would then be presented as yet another unprovoked Russian aggression against peace-loving, bunny-hopping freedom and democracy. Now, of course, what Ukraine would say, they would say, well, we're putting these weapons in Latvia because it's right next to us, so it's much easier for us to access them rather than having them created in Britain, and then they have to get all the way over to Ukraine. So that would be the reason that they're saying that they're doing this. But on the other hand, it is also a temptation for Russia to just bomb that site in Latvia, as it says here. He says the obvious goal is to force the Kremlin's hand. But I'm just saying, you know, there is another goal there as well. It could be that it's going to be much easier for them to have these weapons components created as near to them as possible. But at the same time, I mean, it is risking things. And we could see Latvia bombed because of this. And then that would get presented to us as Putin's aggression. See, look, he's gone after another of these former USSR states. He wants to take it all right back and be part of Russia again.
Absolutely. These are legitimate targets all over Europe. But Putin is a diplomat. He's not going to take the bait. But he has every right to hit military targets and wherever he wants. It would be one thing if these attacks were against Russian military bases and you know, production facilities. They're not. Overwhelmingly, the Kiev system, run by the U.S., is attacking civilians. Or civilian infrastructure. That's been the case pretty much since late 2003. The war was lost so early. You got the Ukrainian, you know, Air Force was destroyed mostly on the ground, within a week of the original invasion. The command and control structure has always been, that collapsed very early on. There is no unified command and control coming from Kiev anymore. There is certainly no respect for the brass if you're a private in the Ukrainian army. There's very few of them now. This is not something you're going to read about in the New York Times. But still, Russia has every right to do this. And it is a taunt. He's not being dramatic here. It is a taunt. Desperately trying to get Russia to do something. On the other hand, NATO is not much of a threat. I'll say it again. Russia is a premier military power in the world. Whatever kinks they had in their system were ironed out within a month of the invasion of Eastern Ukraine. And now it is an absolute machine. They're able to rotate troops. Ukraine can't rotate troops. Their production blows NATO away. NATO simply doesn't have the resources to build any serious force against Russia. I mean, look at who these defense ministers are. They're mostly women, and the few men have no conception of, you know, they're lawyers or activists. They have no conception of what defense is. they've never seen a battlefield before except on television. Yeah, you could do that when you have the U.S. protecting you, which is why I kind of like Trump, you know, dressing him down for that. I would love to see NATO simply fall apart. Clearly, I mean, Turkey is not going along with the U.S., obviously opposed to the U.S. in the Middle East. Spain, same thing. France is deeply divided, both in its military and civilian elite establishment, about Ukraine. And as we know, France has left NATO before. In my book, I go into great detail about, you know, we always, you know, talk about German engineering. Well, that apparently, that era is over, because the Leopard tanks that they've been producing are unusable. I don't know if it's, you know, immigration or whatever it is. Russia to destroy a tank manufacturing center in Germany would really be irrelevant, because these tanks are third rate. The only time Ukraine forces have ever done anything decent against Russia is using Russian equipment or old Soviet equipment. This is something brand new. These aren't the old Panzers. These are Sweden. That's why, you know, Russia has these you know, assemblies where they show the captured weaponry. And they're showing how it would be poor quality. You know, Sweden had the Puma that they were actually selling, or sorry, giving to Ukraine as a light tank. It's not. It was never designed as a light tank. A rifle could go through it. And so you have these crews, you know, I mean, I'm sick and tired of these Orthodox men on board being killed for this delusion, whether it be in the West or in Zelensky, who is completely now, I mean, he's always been, you know, into cocaine. I think now it's affected him to such an extent that I think the lack of sleep is really, you know, the military establishment tells him what he wants to hear. That's been going on for a long time. So yeah, command and control, production, all of these things, you know, the quality of what NATO is producing is very poor. The worst part of it, and I have it in my book too, and the saddest part of it is the Air Force. The new, the F-16s that have been sent to Ukraine with a pilot, say Ukrainian pilot who was trained only on simulators in France, never actually flown the thing before, gets in for a combat mission against Russia. It gets off the runway and is immediately shot down. These are metal coffins. The F-16 casualty rate is 100%. You know, and these are high quality, you know, men. I mean, to be a fighter pilot, you have to be pretty extraordinary. And it's baffling the Russian establishment now. They're killing these guys, really for the thing. Hopefully, you know, as you know, a few American senators have said, they're killing a lot of people, but hopefully maybe a few Russians also will also be killed. And but the longer they do this, the more that Russia proves to the world that it is the top military power on the planet, especially in terms of quality. They're battle hardened, they're battle tested, they're loyal. The men coming into Ukraine is they're able to revolve troops from the home front to Ukraine all the time. Ukraine can't do that, which is so sad. These guys are dying of infections, you know, like it's, you know, at the front on a regular basis. And it's more sad than anything else. But it's very extremely depressing. It's almost irrelevant. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say there must be a lot of pressure. I should imagine there is a lot of pressure on Putin to attack the West, attack some of these places in the West, like in Latvia, where they're creating the weaponry that's being used against them. Do you think? I mean, surely there's got to be a lot of pressure being put on him to do this.
There is, and mostly from military establishment. and from Russian patriots that make up a huge portion of the population. Putin is very popular. He's always been very popular, but even more so since the war started. The only criticism is that he's too conservative in his approach to this. If he destroys a tank factory in France, which he could do very easily, he has every right to do that. They're killing people in Russia, or especially things that are being used to hit civilians. NATO, I don't think, has the power to do much about it. They don't have the manpower. They don't have the material. They don't have the money. They don't have the political will to do much about it. NATO is, to be nice about it, a paper tiger. And of course, deeply divided. Now, the frightening concept is that you have elites in the West. I'm not sure whether this is the U.S. so much as mostly the EU and NATO that want to use Poland. Don't worry about Ukraine anymore. Now depopulate Poland as they depopulated Ukraine. You have plenty in the Polish military establishment that are opposed to this. You have a handful of appointed hacks who love this idea. Could you imagine? The general, I can't remember his name, talked about this, saying our men would be slaughtered against what the Russian army is today. That's the new concept, using Poland to make up for the total loss of the Ukrainian military. You know, it is a total loss. That's being talked about. So elections there mean quite a bit. But as of now, and when I published my book, they're deeply divided over this. I don't think there's the popular will over this. So maybe a false flag attack here or there. You know, you might expect something like that. But it's that's a terrifying idea.
Well, I should imagine. I mean, he doesn't go and attack France, say, for producing these weapons, because then that would be seen as that's an attack on a NATO country. Then you would have all-out war. But I mean, he would be perfectly entitled to do that. But because these countries are being used to artificially extend this war, I mean, he is showing an incredible amount of patience and diplomacy, I would say, but by not acting against it. Getting back to the notes, Moscow found a middle ground in mass precision strikes on drone-producing facilities across NATO-occupied Ukraine. Namely, while these strikes will only partially undermine the Kiev regime's, or should we say NATO's, ability to launch massive drone attacks on Russia, they send a clear message to the regime. We know where you make your drones, and we can do this exact same thing to you if you force our hand. And indeed, if the Kremlin decides to launch retaliatory strikes on NATO for providing not only the drones, but also the targeting or even direct control over these weapons that keep attacking Russian civilians, the facilities would be obliterated within minutes. Moscow's world-class long-range weapons are effectively unstoppable by any NATO system. Whether Russia will ever use these missiles is entirely up to the EU and the US. President Vladimir Putin has proven time and again that he is not keen on escalation, as demonstrated by his strategic patience, to the point that it is becoming frustrating for many Russians who normally support him. The main reason for this extreme caution is his unequivocal understanding of the responsibility that comes with leading the country with the world's most powerful strategic arsenal. It can be argued that all of us are incredibly lucky to have such a man lead Russia. Unfortunately, this is not reciprocated in any way by the other side. Quite the contrary, the US, UK and EU NATO keep doing everything in their power to escalate the already precarious situation to the boiling point. Now, it seems to me is that the author here is very sort of pro-Russia. And you, Matt, you say that Russia is the premier military power. I mean, what are you basing that on? Because I'm fairly certain that the Americans will say, no, it's America. America is the premier military power here. So what's your justification for saying that Russia are number one, effectively?
Well, thank you for asking me that. Actually, I have a book that I'm working on the U.S. military. The U.S. military is falling apart by its own admission, especially its Navy. The defeat against Iran, the defeat against Afghanistan, even going back to Somalia. The U.S. have been humiliated over and over again. Russia's missile system is superior. The U.S. does not have hypersonics. North Korea has hypersonics. The U.S. does not. And besides all that, you know, what 85% of the, if there was a draft tomorrow, something like 85 to 90% of American boys couldn't be drafted, either for a mental issue or for, I think it's 85% according to Newsweek, or obesity, or something like this. The Russian conscription is not a huge problem. It's battle-hardened, obviously. And it's also very careful. It has a very clear strategy. And you have people in the Defense Department who are actually, you know, uniformed officers. Now, the Minister of Defense now is not, but there's a very specific reason for that I talk about elsewhere. But prior to him, you did have a uniformed officer there. Ministers of Defense in the West are, you know, as I said, either women or men who, you know, artists and people like that who have actually no, you know, they're just political appointees. Beyond that, they've given so much away. Their ammunition shortage is absolutely critical. And I justify it by the fact that the U.S. has been so badly beaten and Russia is only just getting started. One of the big issues is that Russia's military-industrial complex is state-owned. Same thing for China. The American, it's for profit, and some of it has been outsourced. So you get the lowest bidder. And you know, in my book, I talk about, you know, Ukrainians who say the American equipment is not all that great. We would rather use old Soviet stuff than new American stuff. So there's a million reasons to justify it. In the U.S., you know, the political will is not to be found here. How many Americans want to invade Russia? You know, I think zero for the most part. Russia, just like no different than Iran, fighting for their homeland, fighting for Orthodox people who live in Ukraine, Russian speakers. So there's a million reasons to talk about this. Training standards have collapsed, even in elite units. So if you're my Patreon, I talk a lot about the collapse of the U.S. military, including the academies, training, you know, all this stuff. Giving bronze stars to people who run the printer in the financial office, which actually happened, by the way. You know, the more the U.S. loses, the more medals they stick on themselves, it seems. Yeah, so there's a million ways.
Well, I can imagine. But I mean, just what happened in Afghanistan and what's recently happened in Iran, I mean, it really shows you that America is not the world's leading military. Getting back to the notes, the conflict in Ukraine is entering a new phase of escalation after Ukrainian forces struck civilian infrastructure and orchestrated a terrorist attack in Starobelsk, Luhansk. With an escalation in the conflict seeming imminent, Europe has the opportunity to prevent it by cutting off arms supplies and ceasing to label Russia an enemy, but this still appears unlikely. In this context, that is terror against Russian civilians, Russian-American negotiations to end the war have been suspended, and arms control agreements have ceased to be valid. The clear mutual restrictions that existed before no longer apply, meaning Russia has no obligations towards the West and now has greater freedom of action in military terms. Therefore, Russia can take military technical measures that it deems necessary for its security, including the option to escalate further. Still, Russia remains open to dialogue and expects European leaders to change their approach and return to a political solution to the conflict. Russian forces will target defense industry facilities in Kiev, including sites where drones are designed, manufactured, programmed, and prepared for use. The Kiev regime uses these drones with assistance from NATO experts who supply components, provide intelligence, and offer guidance. Ukraine persistently carries out attacks that kill Russian citizens, confirming the terrorist nature of the European-backed Kiev regime, while Russian forces systematically seek to spare Ukrainian civilians, directing strikes primarily at military targets. Ukraine and Europe are not showing any willingness to de-escalate the conflict, but on the contrary, they are continuing a course that leads to its deepening. Europe, with its political and military support for Ukraine, is contributing to the prolongation of the conflict, which further worsens the consequences for the Ukrainian people and the economy. Now, we're talking here about military agreements. I mean, the ones that I'm aware of that don't exist anymore are these nuclear agreements. But I don't think it's talking about nuclear agreements here, because it's not talking about the option of nuking Ukraine. So it must be talking about some other kind of military agreements. So what do you think the author is referring to there, Matt?
Oh, the peace plans, the one from the Trump administration, and the other one from the EU, which are absolutely idiotic. I've covered them in the past. You know, that's really the agreements that they're making reference to. So, they're absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the Ukrainian agreement is just full scale surrender. I don't know how that's a peace agreement in any way. You know, the European agreement is far harsher than the American one. It's almost designed to be rejected by the Russians. And it's just so that's what he's not talking about START or anything like that. I don't have it right in front of me. But it is almost laughable in how impractical it would be. And they all seem to imply that NATO has the ability to enforce anything. It doesn't. You know, you have nations that really don't like each other, speaking different languages, civilians running NATO. It's a huge bureaucracy. You know, without regular supplies, you know, the entire concept of NATO is just let Americans do everything. Sort of like the Israelis. You know, why are we dying when there's when the U.S. is out there? They never really had to build much, which is why what has come out of the European nations in terms of material has been very poor. Which is also why they send it to Ukraine. You know, Denmark, for example, sent all of their artillery systems to Ukraine. Now, they were vaporized the minute they were they got there. But you know, it's laughable at this point. It's absolutely laughable at this point. I'm trying to pull it up here. You know, it's absolutely, you know, it's very, very, it's bizarre more than anything else. And everyone in the universe, except for, you know, I mean, a handful of Americans, now this should have ended in April, May of 22.
It certainly should have done. It's, continue here with the notes. The Kiev leadership is profiting from the war, and so are their Western partners. All of these actors are reaping financial gains and political points from it, even as European society increasingly opposes this war. Continuing the Ukrainization of European politics, the current European elite remains faithful to its globalist ideals and acts Russophobic. The conflict could have been avoided or ended long ago if Ukraine had accepted a peaceful solution and European countries had suspended arms deliveries, because in that case, Ukraine would have lost the capacity to continue fighting. However, as long as the Europeans pump money into Ukraine, send mercenaries, violate international law, and cover up terrorism, the war will continue. And this is an interesting accusation that's made here. The Kiev leadership is profiting from the war, and so are their Western partners. But certainly the European countries aren't profiting from the war because of the price of the electricity, the price of the gas. This week we learned that someone's finally been prosecuted for blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline. They were Ukrainian, of course. So the allegation here that the leadership, the Western partners are profiting, but their countries aren't profiting. So, I mean, that's an allegation of corruption that's going on there. And I'm not so sure that, you know, corruption is the reason why the war is continuing, but it certainly is a part of it. Matt, what are your final thoughts on this today?
This has been an absolutely bizarre experience because, you know, they're actually literally running out of Ukrainian men, which is why there's some people who want to send the refugees back, but that's not going to work. That's why they're refugees. Ukrainian men at the front are poorly trained. They're thrown there, just anything, to this meat grinder. You know, it's almost pathetic at this point, and I choose my words very carefully. And yet NATO offers these peace agreements as if they're the premier power in the world, that they're able to enforce whatever they want there. Although I have to admit, they do accept that Eastern Ukraine is a part of Russia. All the peace agreements do mention that, including Crimea. There's no way these people are going back to Ukraine under any circumstances. So I feel legitimate pity here. And now that Ukraine is literally running out of men, the worst possible scenario is for the regime to now go to Poland and use them. And I don't think there's a whole lot of support for that, even in the country. But you have generals who are out there saying, yes, this is what we want to do. But, you know, so the regime wants to depopulate yet another country. It is just for the sake of killing a handful of Russians. They know that they can't win. This isn't really about winning at this point. This is about, you know, terrorism. When the U.S. Can't win, which has been the normal been the case everywhere, it uses terrorism. You know, in Iran, clearly, precision weapon strikes against schools and hospitals, just like the Israelis. Again, precision weapons. In other words, it's deliberate. Now, this is what the U.S. does when it's losing. Or when it has no chance, you have people who want to invade Iran. Can you imagine the ignorance of such a person? Russia is not understood by people in the State Department or the Defense Department. It's constructed by them. That's been a slogan that I've used for a long time now. They've invented an enemy, and I've tried, as you mentioned already, everything in their power to get them to become that enemy. But Putin has been incredibly reserved because he is an actual statesman, unlike the idiots running the Western countries. And you are absolutely right. Europe is deindustrialized. Its economy has been in shambles ever since the sanctions were put on by Obama, including third-party sanctions. And it's gotten worse over the years, especially since the war began. Germany has lost a massive amount of money due to the sanctions. You know, and I think Germans are aware of this, despite the controlled media over there. It's everything that we predicted, but no one listened to us.
I always thought the worst possible outcome would be fighting down to the last Ukrainian, killing all the Ukrainians off. Never thought that they'd go one step further, kill all the Ukrainians off, and then move on to the Polish and start using the Polish. And that's sort of beyond the worst possible outcome. I certainly hope they don't do that. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.